Like many of you, I watched the first few years of the War on Terror with a mix of anger and disbelief. And so I certainly felt a personal engagement with the kinds of issues that had been going on. And in terms of my teaching, this was something that I talked about with my students right from the outset. But it took some time before these kind of issues became part of my academic research. I have a background in politics and history. I have a PhD in political theory. I moved into a geography department. And the project that I started working on when I moved there in 2002, so shortly after the events of September 11th, 2001, was to start work on a history of the concept of territory. This was the big project that I wanted to work on. In 2004, Bush was re-elected, and for me, actually, that was the real catalyst to say, you need to stop shouting at the television and you need to do something about this. You need to use the kind of work that you've been doing on the history of the concept of territory, the historical, theoretical, conceptual work that I'd been doing, and show why this helped to understand what was going on at the moment in the world. That it wasn't enough simply to do this purely academic research that I'd been writing and that I was working on for a book that I've now finished, but it felt to me that it was important to actually say something about why this mattered, why this was useful or politically relevant today. So in early 2005, I wrote a piece which I thought might just be a single piece to try and show what I thought was happening, what I had to offer perhaps in terms of an analysis, given the work I'd been doing on this question of territory. And that piece led to another piece, which led to an invitation, which led to another invitation. And so over the next 3 years, I alternated the very historical work that I was doing with the very political work that I was doing on the question of territory, resulting in the book Terror and Territory. And that's what I want to say a little about with you this evening. Because what I want to suggest is that the 10 years of war in Afghanistan need to be understood within a much wider context of the changes that have been taking place in the world since at least the end of the Cold War. And this is particularly, and the focus I'm going to offer today, is on what's happened to an international legal term, the notion of territorial integrity. Now that's a term that you find in the United Nations Charter. It's a term that you find in almost every United Nations Security Council resolution. And territorial integrity comprises two distinct but interrelated notions: territorial preservation and territorial sovereignty. The effective idea here is that states should have their existing borders preserved and they should have exclusive sovereignty within those borders. Within its territory, a state is sovereign, and its borders provide the limits to that sovereignty. So the term territorial integrity can be understood effectively as the spatial extent of sovereignty. Where does this sovereignty apply, and where does it cease to apply? Now, one of the key things that I think has happened in the post-Cold War world is that these two terms that are there within this notion of territorial integrity have been pulled apart. Territorial sovereignty and territorial preservation are no longer given that equal status within the understanding of that term. The territorial sovereignty has been fundamentally challenged, and this has been part through the arguments about humanitarian intervention or the responsibility to protect civilian populations, but particularly in the last 10 years has been adapted to look at two other key areas. This is the notion of contingent sovereignty, that sovereignty is contingent on particular modes of behaviour. If you harbour terrorists within your borders, then your sovereignty can be compromised by external powers. If you pursue weapons of mass destruction and you become a regional or perhaps even a global threat, your sovereignty can be compromised by external powers. So the idea is that the international community, or particularly, as we know, the US and its allies, deem that certain types of behaviour are appropriate and certain other types of behaviour are inappropriate. Governments may be persuaded or cajoled into changing behaviour. You could look at Libya, for instance, under the Tony Blair period, about how Libya was supposedly a country that had come back into the international community because it was now pursuing particular kinds of behaviour that was seen as being important. Or if they don't follow the rules, they can be removed. Libya over the last year or so, for instance. So a key founding principle of the United Nations, the compromise after the Second World War, the compromise that tried to strike a balance between never again World War II and never again a Holocaust, that compromise that was there in that settlement seems to be being pulled apart at the moment. In sum, the idea that a state has a monopoly of power, of sovereignty within its borders, is no longer assumed. Now, Tony Blair bears a huge responsibility for this. because Tony Blair was not only one of the key advocates of the humanitarian interventions, places like Kosovo, Sierra Leone, for instance, Blair didn't seem to think that there was any kind of distinction between the arguments he was making in those places and the arguments that were being made by the neoconservatives in the United States over Afghanistan and over Iraq. If you look at what Gordon Brown said or didn't say in the lead up to the wars in Kosovo and Iraq, I think Brown can be thought of along similar lines to Blair. And David Cameron and William Hague have made very similar arguments, some of them trading on the arguments of a British neoconservative organisation called the Henry Jackson Society, whose banner headline on their website calls for a democratic geopolitics. You can make of that what you will. Now, when these people, Blair and others, invoke this notion of territorial integrity, and you found this in almost all of Blair's speeches leading up to military intervention in places, it was clear that Blair understood territorial integrity basically to be territorial preservation, the maintenance of the territorial status quo, conceived almost as an absolute, because he would keep arguing, if you don't allow this to stay in the way that it is, there's a danger to stability, there's danger to prosperity, there's the risk of secession, the risk of fragmentation of states, and that this may not be a good thing for the workings of the international global order, equally the international financial order. So that territorial preservation was something that he continually wanted to stress, and he stressed this in a large number of places. This is a long-standing idea within international relations and international law. If you look at the way that Africa decolonized, that it would inherit the boundaries of the colonial states as these became independent. Something similar happened in South America when that decolonized. The way that Yugoslavia initially fragmented along the lines of the constituent republics of that federal state. The same with the with the USSR. The way that the republics within the Soviet Union became the new successor states that continued. So the idea of preserving borders, preserving territory, is long-standing. But Blair made this explicit in the way that he was arguing about it. He called for a stability around questions of territory, but he called for a contingency of the sovereignty within those borders. If states didn't meet particular modes of behaviour, those states' sovereignty could be compromised. Intervention, he suggested, could be justified. Tony Blair was making this argument in terms of the stability he thought that was needed in terms of global prosperity and global financial markets. But you can't understand territorial integrity simply as this idea of fixing all of the territorial boundaries in the world in cement, of keeping things as they are, of never changing anything. The two elements of that term seem to me to be crucial to understand it, that within those boundaries, the state is sovereign. And that's the thing that we continually see being compromised today. Humanitarian intervention, the argument of protecting civilian populations, but then co-opted into this idea of people being harboured within the boundaries of the state, that you're harbouring a terrorist within the state, therefore your sovereignty is compromised, or that you're pursuing weapons of mass destruction. Afghanistan, then, on that understanding, is unfortunately only one element of a much wider challenge. We need to look at a much longer time period than simply 10 years, and we need to look at many more places, unfortunately, than just Afghanistan and Iraq. The war on terror can't be contained within those two places. It needs to take into account wider geographies, looking at what's been going on in Pakistan, in Yemen, in Somalia, in Lebanon, in Palestine, in the Maghreb, events going on today in Libya, but also I suggest some of the things that are going on perhaps below the radar in Nigeria. It links, I think, to earlier events in Kosovo, to an extent in Sierra Leone, certainly 1989 in Panama. The logic, unfortunately, has been appropriated by states other than the US. Look at what China is doing in Tibet and in Xinjiang province. Look at what Russia has been doing in Chechnya and how it's recoded its rhetoric there. Look at what happened in the war in Georgia. Look at what Israel is doing in Palestine and the occupied territories. So that these two meanings of this term, territorial integrity, are increasingly in tension. That Blair would repeatedly invoke the territorial integrity of a country just as he was about to bomb that country. This idea that you can fix the boundaries, but that the sovereignty can be inherently compromised by that. Look at Libya. Look at the United Nations Security Council Resolution 1970 and 1973, both of these in the lead up to the justification of NATO intervention. Security Council says, reaffirming its strong commitment to the sovereignty, independence, territorial integrity and national unity of the Libyan Arab Republic. Well, sovereignty of whom and independence of what? of the people, of the state, of the government, and territorial integrity of what? A no-fly zone is clearly a compromise to the ability of a state to project its power within its boundaries. It's clearly a challenge to the sovereignty of that state within its territory. And so what you're finding in this is this invoking of this idea of saying how important it is at the very same time that it's being violated. And you found that in Blair's rhetoric. You find that in a large number of things that are going on within international law, the way that these things are being thought through. That territorial integrity is always challenged through intervention, even if there is an attempt alongside to preserve the territorial settlement. So the idea that the boundaries of Iraq along ethnic or along religious lines, or the boundaries of Afghanistan might be redrawn, seemed to be utterly off the agenda in terms of this challenge to it. It was what was going in within the existing borders that was the problem, rather than any suggestion that the borders themselves might be a problem. I think you can make the case, and Lindsay hinted at this in her comments, you can make the case that actually one of the reasons why the Allied and US intervention in Iraq and in Afghanistan has lasted so long is precisely to try to preserve the territories of those states along the borders that they currently have. Now, while the ideal of territorial integrity is you have in the United Nations Security Council founding the United Nations Charter and in Security Council resolutions, the ideal of this was never really respected by many powerful states. You can look at a whole number of examples where the US and its allies have violated the territorial integrity of a range of states. But what I think you're having at the moment is something a little different, because you're having this concerted argument against it. It was the argument made by the humanitarian interventionists initially that's been co-opted by neoconservatism and by arguments about contingent sovereignty. But you can come up with a whole range of places where this argument has been made, but you can see a large number of places where it was violated and the argument was not made in the same way. Look at the US involvement throughout the Cold War in a whole range of countries using communism as the reason for its intervention. Look at the way that the United States intervened in Central America in the so-called war on drugs. Look at the way that they intervened in a number of places throughout the 90s, or failed to intervene in a number of places throughout the 90s, because they lacked some overarching narrative through which they could structure the kinds of interventions that were being talked about. Then humanitarian intervention was advocated as one way to deal with what was happening in Kosovo, partly in response to what was perceived to be a failure in terms of Bosnia, as an intervention in Sierra Leone, which was supposed to be in some way to atone for what had not happened in Rwanda. But today you have, with this war on terror argument, the harbouring of terrorists within borders, the pursuit of weapons of mass destruction, a justification that's being mobilised in a large number of places for a large number of reasons, but the logic, it seems to me, is very similar. Territorial integrity, then, on this reading, is fractured. It's fractured into the two different parts of what make up this notion. There's an insistence on the preservation of territorial extent, but there's an insistence that the sovereignty within that territory is compromised if certain modes of behaviour are not followed. And it's often in exactly the same places where the sovereignty is compromised that the preservation is so much insisted upon. Now, the challenge, it seems, for anyone who's trying to work on this kind of question is, how do you put these back together? Or if you don't put them back together, what do you try to put in their place? This was brought together for very good reasons after the Second World War in order to try to create a stable international order. Something has changed, and I don't think the pieces can be easily put back together as a result of this. As Lindsay said, I think what's been happening in Libya is in some sense an attempt to try to rescue the idea of humanitarian intervention from the way that it got clouded by the war on terror. On my reading, though, humanitarian intervention in some sense is as much of a problem in terms of the justification for these arguments. Britain, it seems to me, has a major responsibility here because its foreign policy did so much by way of the unravelling of these notions. And the tragedy of Afghanistan is that the war has destroyed a country which was already fractured, that the rubble has been pounded to dust. What you have is its territorial unity is something that remains entirely unrealistic all the time that its territorial sovereignty is so utterly compromised. Now, like Lindsay, I just want to finish with relating this to what's happening back here in the UK, as well as the horrors being inflicted in Afghanistan, of thinking about the impact that these interventions, Afghanistan, Iraq, and now Libya, are having in terms of the prosperity and the financial situation in this country. I just want to read you a quote to end. "Every gun that is made, every warship launched, every rocket fired signifies, in the final sense, a theft from those who hunger and are not fed, from those who are cold and not clothed. Who said that? 1953, American President Eisenhower. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Stuart.